看来我们只能靠自己了。
地球错失了最后一个机会。
这座宫殿不是庇护所。
我觉得旁边的二货人哪辆几万驴的毛病。
Hi everyone, and welcome to Middle Earth, your source for insight into China cultural industry, how the cultural business work in that part of the world told by the one who are in the trenches of creation, production and distribution. I'm your host, Aladin Faré from CCP, China Compass Production, your film production service in the Middle Kingdom, and this show is a member of the Cineca Network. As usual, you can take a look at the show notes to find the recommendations and the guest contact info. I guess, dear listeners, you should all know that Interstellar, every single superhero movie or The Great Wall had a whole massive VFX team to help them complete the movie. But now also features like Pegasus or Lost in Russia are now also using VFX to improve the whole quality of the film. Could makes one wonder what now separates now a film from an animation film. Today I'm glad to have John Tietz on the show, a visual effects supervisor and a producer, and we are today in his office of his company, Bong Bong Picture.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for having me.
You have worked in the USA, Australia and China in movies that range from studio blockbuster to micro-budget independent.
Yep.
I will go briefly over your China story. So you first came to China in 2009 to shoot two films and you saw the potential of the film market over there. If there was already a solid film tradition in China, VFX was basically unheard of.
Yeah, it was very early stage of VFX here.
Okay, so you saw basically an opportunity, you moved there full time, you created a VFX company, and you have worked on more than 20 films.
Yeah, upwards of like 30 films, 30 Chinese films now.
Okay, sorry.
No, that's okay.
your PDF was not up to date.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, but it is close to 30 films.
So just to get the basics, so VFX goes from creating the spaceship in Star Wars all the way to just erasing the cables that hold the actors during fight scene, basically.
That's right. The way I kind of define it is anything you can't shoot in the camera becomes an effect. So it can be, if there's an alien spaceship, of course, it's going to be very difficult to find alien spaceships and shoot them in camera. But then, there'll be things like a 1920s car or something. You may not be able to access it. We're shooting in Shanghai or something. The cars are in Beijing. It might be too expensive to actually drive the cars or ship the cars. So you can't physically get that thing there for the shoot. So sometimes there's business decisions like that. And then there is a bunch of cleanup things like you're talking about where there are mistakes or some sort of thing that has to be repaired because the shoot, you couldn't do it without that thing, like a wire or cables or other stuff, props that might have to be cleaned up or fixed.
So in theory, VFX can do everything, anything. It's just a budget question.
That is true. Yeah, I would say that. It's not everybody can do everything. So, but I think if you did have the right budget, like really photorealistic digital human beings, obviously it's still very difficult to do, but you can go out there and you can access the right group and give them enough time and give them enough money and they probably can pull it off. They're probably still would be some feeling that it's CG from the audience. So it still may not be perfectly executed, but I would say it's getting close that we can do almost anything if you have the budget. Yes.
As you have worked on both sides of the Pacific, could you give us a brief introduction on how the VFX may be improved in China and how it is compared to the way of working in the US or Australia?
Yeah, that's really cool. I mean, that's my whole background here. And the reason we have a company here is like to address that exact question. So I'm glad I asked it. Yes, it's a great question. So then when I first came to China, that's what I started to see is like we'd work on these films and we would keep repeating the same issues again and again and again. So it's kind of like bashing your head against the wall. And it was obviously things needed to be done better. So when you said the market was sort of immature like 10, 15 years ago, it was like just rules and systems and things weren't in place, right? So I think that's the biggest single difference between Hollywood and here and what's changing here is Hollywood, it's just has gone through it more and they've developed a system and they've developed like processes and they've developed people with experience that you can assemble together and get things done more efficiently, you know, so which becomes, you know, budgetarily, you can get more out of the budget and you can get it done in the time frames, things like that. Now, there's also kind of difference, like I'm not sure your background and just even everything else in business, things are different in China, obviously. So products will adapt themselves to the China market. Those are usually the ones that are kind of successful. So I see that as a lot of what we're trying to do in China. So my background's, yeah, it's Hollywood, but you can't just take a Hollywood system and put it in China. It doesn't work. So a lot of it is the business side. So Chinese films, you know, you can't get $200 million USD. It's just the market won't bear budgets like a Marvel film. So our domestic market, like our box office is pretty good here. Like it's pretty high. It's actually passing, you know, with all the virus stuff, we don't know. But in the next few years, it's supposed to pass North America with box office. So the business was going to be bigger domestically. But Marvel films, they do domestic North America, but then like 70% of their box office is worldwide. Now, Chinese films, they don't travel. So, you know, people don't go and see Chinese films outside of China. So we're still 70% less on budget just from the world market. So that's one huge difference between Hollywood and here, is there always will be constraints.
Yeah, and also because the public here will see Marvel movies, they will see the amazing visual effect, and then they will just see maybe The Wandering Earth is great, but then there's like this movie, Shanghai Fortress, was just really horrible on the eye.
Sure.
And I guess that, yeah, you have less budget, but you have maybe the same requirement from the audience now.
That's right. Yeah, because you're competing. Someone goes to see the movie, you know, I'm an audience member, I have my whatever, 60 RMB, 100 RMB, or whatever it is. Like, I have my money in my pocket, I go to the movie theater, I want to see something, you're going to choose between like a Marvel movie and a Chinese movie. Now, Chinese movies have advantage because it's culturally going to be closer storytelling-wise to what is relatable to that audience. But the spectacle side of it, if they're there for escaping and seeing huge VFX things, you know, the choice is, do they watch the local one or the Marvel one? So it's a tough business to be in. So the other difference, like business wise, between Hollywood and China is 10, 15 years ago, the business model in China was like a hard cost flat bid. So if I had like, you know, 500 VFX shots or something like that, the producer may say you have $500,000 to do it or $1 million to do it. And we negotiate that and then we're on our way. Now, the film gets more complicated over the course of time that you have in making the film, but there's never any more money. So the producers would think they're winning because they may get up to 1,000 shots and still in the same budget, but the vendors, the people doing the work, probably wouldn't put more people on it. You know, they'd probably be trying to do twice as much work with the same team. So the quality suffers, right? Now, Hollywood is more like a change order system. You negotiate it first, you negotiate your 500 shots for your million, 10 million, whatever it is, it's much more expensive. But when things change, the budgets go up as well, and you do a change order system. So the Hollywood system, completely different than the local system, and is just, even 10 years, 15 years later, that's still a thing we're dealing with. I think that's the biggest sort of issue between doing stuff with Hollywood and China, is to figure out the business model. Like, how do people actually pay and, you know, run budgets efficiently and are accustomed to how to do the business? So totally different in the West and Chinese. And like some of that, you know, will drive the quality and how well we can do things. So I think there's a lot of stuff like that. The more, you know, I work here and learn stuff, it's not necessarily the skill. You know, you may not see as great a work in like a Shanghai Fortress or something like that as to a Marvel film, but there's a lot of different intricacies, like, you know, little bits and pieces of why that's happening. It's not like an incompetence or something like that. There's a lot more constraints in the market and variables of things.
But did things improve over the year? And if yes, how?
Yeah. So, like, again, as a business, we're trying to, you know, one of our big things is try to, like, like work that business model, like try to figure out in Hollywood how you can actually, you know, work more efficient than Hollywood, but not do the China old school way. So kind of like what we're doing or what we're trying to do is like the new China system. So you're trying to take what's good from Hollywood. You're trying to take what's good from the old China method and put them together and form this new thing. Now, definitely, like it, without a doubt, if you see movies from 10 years ago, VFX wise, if you see movies 10 years ago, VFX, and you see Chinese VFX movies now, it's getting way better. And it's like not necessarily the budgets either. Like there was kind of, you know, the market got really hot 2015, 2016, you know, and the budgets kind of went up. But 2017, 2018, 2019, budgets kind of flattened down, everything tightened up, and the quality still kept getting better. So there's definitely a sort of skill level and experience level, a more thoughtful process, more like, you know, methodical, systematic way of doing things. So it's improving every year. It's just there's still, you know, a long, long ways to go. It's still early days.
So it's not just having more computers and having better equipment. It's also just planning.
Yeah. And again, that's what we're kind of doing as a company. So our business model, we're not really a VFX company. Like our business model as a company is different than, doesn't really exist anywhere in the world, sort of specifically for China. So in the West, you have big studios, Warner Brothers, Paramount, you know, and they'll have big VFX departments. They'll have their own on-staff teams. They'll have produced big films before. They have like this kind of system in place. So that includes people and equipment and things like that. The big studios here, they don't have that infrastructure, right? So their options are to go maybe hire a VFX company, but the VFX company's agenda is to stay alive, make money, you know, pay the artists their salaries and things. And that doesn't always jive with the agenda of the studio, who want the best work possible for their budget. So when that conflict happens, there's like a pressure, you know, who's going to win that. So,
and who wins?
Yeah.
Usually?
Well, in Hollywood, they'll have their own supervisors, and their own teams and things. So the pressure just keeps happening. But at the same time, they also have this change order system. So, you know, that's how Hollywood deals with it. In China, we're just getting through that. As us as a company, we are a third party. So that doesn't exist in the West. We're like a company that acts as a VFX department for studios. And then we'll take the film, figure out from the very beginning, how are we going to run this entire film VFX wise to get the best product in the end. So that includes all the way from story in the beginning, you know, storyboards, concept art, hiring the right supervisor, putting the right team in place to manage the vendors, to the actual people that will do the work, the companies that will do the work. And we'll go around the world and find the best solutions for those vendors, you know, take in rebates for different regions of the world, you know, Australia, New Zealand rebates, you know, there's rebates all over the place. There's like different regions, Russian, very good work, you know, and actually the value is good. Korea, you know, and then you get into really hard stuff. You have to go to the Hollywood kind of vendors.
Okay, so you basically congregate talent to help the film being made. And then are you also on set just to be like the whisper behind the directors or the first DOP and telling them, maybe this light is really going to ruin our way of working?
Yeah, that totally happens. So yeah, we're completely involved. We start in pre-production back in story. So we'll work with director. I think we're usually some of the first people on, like on board on the films, because I think these films, they're kind of VFX heavy. They understand that it's going to be complicated in their film. Like it's a bit of a black box VFX, but it's going to be complicated. They don't necessarily know everything about it. So they want, particularly directors, want to start to understand that it's going to be handled well. So yeah, DOP, production designer, us, director, you know, we start working on the film together and you start to do storyboards and location scouting. You're talking through the potential problems, issues that will come up. How are we going to solve them? And that will roll onto the shoot, you know. So usually we'll have talked through the stuff in the beginning. So the shoot will be a continuation of what we learned through the pre-production process and all the conversations and things. And then, yeah, we work on, do the shoots, cover a team, because it's usually a little bit more complicated than just a couple people. There's a lot of data going back and forth and making sure the pre-production materials are all accessible and ready to find, and you know, the time requirements, like the speed on set, you have to be really organized to make sure it runs well. You know, it's really expensive per hour to shoot things, so you just want to be completely prepped as much as possible.
Can you give like a really concrete example of more than just we have to be planned in advance and we have to be ready? Like, I don't know if any directors listen to this show and they want to maybe add VFX, like what, when they shoot, what is the one thing they shouldn't do at all?
Like, I can give an example. Like, we worked on Lost in Russia, right? So that's our most recent film. And with the virus stuff, it'll probably come out in theaters soon when the theaters come back, I guess.
But it has been put for free on Douyin.
Yeah, right? It got put out on for free. But yeah, that was because of the virus thing and everything. But I think it, you know, it's a pretty good, visually it's a good film. Like, we worked really hard to make it look good. So on screens, it'll look good. I think people will go back. But anyways, like, that, every film has its own thing, you know. Now that movie, most of it takes place on a train, right? So that becomes your kind of thing. And it's VFX on that film is like actually a lot more complicated than you think. Like, we can't shoot on the proper train, right? Like, that train has to be on the stage, right? And it's a very realistic movie as far as dramatic storytelling, characters. You have to be believable. If you aren't conveying, if an audience doesn't believe that they're on a train, they're not there with the characters. So, you know, that has to do with stuff outside the window and lighting, and like, it just has to do with everything. Every single time you stop at the train stations and things, like, most of those are like shot in some place, but it's mostly, there's lots of VFX that go into all of the train station shots. And so that movie, that's the problem or the challenge with that movie. So you have to work with the DP, the production designer. How are you going to shake the train? How are we going to do all that? Like, you could just make out the window stuff like VFX, CG, but we want it really, really real. So we had to go and shoot like all the footage. Basically, we took a team and like drove the route. So the environments change over the course of them traveling in movie time. So we have to cover, you know, daytime, nighttime, different environments, like the right time of season, like all of the planning that went in just to have access to the right material. So when we got to post, we had what we were going to need. So you can't really know ahead of time, you know, I just want to shoot those 100 meters of this location at dusk, you know, you can't do that. You got to kind of go out and shoot coverage. So that film, that was kind of one of the bigger challenges, was, okay, how do we give the director the most ability to change outside the windows and locations as late as possible in the game? And that took, you know, a lot of planning. So I think from us, when you're in the very beginning, you're trying to understand from the script and help the directors, what is going to be your challenge? You know, what is going to be the big issue with this? And make sure we're prioritizing that and putting the budget towards that issue. I think that's kind of it for directors, is they usually have a good instinct of it because they're usually really close with the writing and stuff. But they may miss something, you know, that is actually going to really impact their storytelling. I think, like, even Lost in Russia, we had the bear scene. It's just really obvious you can't shoot that, right? So, you know, that was well known, but the train stuff was really sort of like, it took a while to make sure that we were going to like be able to get the resources to do that right. And I think it turned out good.
I'm just wondering, because you came to China and you basically trying to bring a better method to implement VFX and improve movies. But I'm just wondering if all those production companies and directors, they welcomed you with open arms, or if you really had a steep curve of telling them, you know, maybe we should do this in a better way, and you had to, it was maybe hard.
Yeah, that's another good question. So it's like, when I came here personally, right, I didn't come with the intention to try to improve a market. I think what happened is you come here and you start to see potential and you work with people. And you, me personally, like, I started to understand what was going on here. And like I really respected it. And like, you know, there's a lot of just history with China, particularly mid recent history. Obviously the country is changing a lot. And for me, that means there's like a lot of stories, like there's just a lot of stuff to be told out there. So that super interests me, like a lot of these 1.5 billion people and how they're going through so much. There's a lot to say. So that means directors, good directors, they need more tools. And I just started to get to know a lot of them personally and things and see that there was talent there, but there was also kind of a, like a, you know, a complication with something like VFX. They didn't have access to the good tools. You know, they were being limited by the ability to actually execute. So they were trying to work with their hands tied behind their back as far as like the VFX stuff. So that became my intention. Like what I was really trying to do is like help these people out sincerely, you know? So trying to actually really do that, which would help them make better films that will make the market better. Now, if you really mean stuff like that, I think they start to trust you more because your intention is to actually help them make a better movie for real, you know? So how do you actually get through that? How do you actually harness that now?
With a lot of baijiu, of course.
Yeah. Well, you know, the right budget, it doesn't always take a lot, but it's like smart with what you got, you know? I think that's really the case of everything. Some stuff, yeah, it just won't be able, you know, you have to be reasonable as well, because there isn't, that happens a lot as well. Like people will have, you know, a production company or somebody, a director, somebody, they'll have like 5 million USD or 30, 40, 50 million RMB to make a film. They want to make Avatar. Now, you know, that's good on them for going for it and stuff like that. But it's just, you got to be pragmatic as well with what you can actually do or can't do. So then, you know, there'll be so many compromises in a, like an attempt to do something like that, that it just compromises your way out of being able to do anything. So you do have to have like, you know, the rubber does have to meet the road at some point, and you have to have like, you know, be able to actually get there. But so trying to say, you know, what you want with your expectation is going to cost 200 million USD isn't an option here. So you're not going to help anybody by just coming in overpriced. You got to literally know what can happen here, how it can happen, limitations, the amount you can expose to outside resources coming in, you know, not relying on that too much. Just what is the entire plan to make that film better? So again, for me, hopefully we work with better directors, you know, on better stories, trying to make better things. So legitimately, they're talented enough that they can take advantage of what we can bring as well. And when your, you know, your goals meet like that, the trust becomes better. So yeah, there's all kinds of issues of trust, like, you know, the VFX industry, because of kind of a bad rap, a lot of people like just not being able to execute in a super professional way, they cause productions and directors to get nervous, right? Because the, you know, if it's going to cause a bunch of problems, or they have an experience with the group and the group has told them wrong things and it's ended up being really poor quality work, of course they're going to be suspicious of the whole process. So you're up against that a lot.
Yeah, because I would guess, like, if you ask a DOP to shoot and he shoots a black scene, then you would say you didn't do your job properly. But yeah, if you ask someone to design an alien, it's kind of hard to define if he did a good job or not.
And there's a lot of opinions and things like that. And it's, yeah, something like that is very complicated. It's super subjective, you know, and it's in the context of, you know, what movie is that alien in? So it could be really friggin' good. Like someone could actually do really good work, like a really good concept, and execute it. But if it's the wrong alien for the movie, you know, you're probably going to end up with a result where the audience isn't going to be happy with the final product of the film and, you know, talk bad about it and won't be successful. So there's that as well.
Let's say a film do VFX, like what's the now the proportion of budget between like the really heavy effect superhero movie to like a more drama story in today's time?
Yeah, because it's a really good question again, because like you're trying to back into things in China, right? Because here there's limitations because the box office can only return a certain amount, that, you know, it's not unlimited. So you have to go, there's a limit on the entire film budget, which means then there'll be a proportion of the VFX budget to the whole budget. We look at that a lot more and squeeze what the expectations or the techniques are to get it done. So like a Marvel film, you know, in Hollywood, those things can be 40, 50, 60% of the entire budget can go to VFX, right? It's almost impossible here. Like it's almost impossible to get that kind of budget. So just now, sort of the bigger VFX films, you can start to get 33, 35, something like that, on something with just tons of VFX, right? So more comfortable is like a 25% of the budget go to VFX, right? So you start to get these films, instead of 150 million, you know, they're 15, they're 20 million, they're 30 million, and you're taking, you know, 25% of that. The budgets are coming way down from like the Marvel side. Now, if you're doing something like more drama and VFX support, you're not getting into the complicated stuff, then yeah, it'll come down from there, like 20%, stuff like that. But the shot counts will still be high. There's a lot more cleanup, you know, the same issue as VFX, the productions have the same thing. So the shoots are under extreme limitations as well. So if you got to try to hit your budget with the production budget, not just the VFX, but the shooting, the days usually come down. And if the shooting days come down, you get more mistakes, you get more like things that you just can't get in camera, which then again puts more burden on the VFX. So another job of ours, our good VFX people, is like you're trying to work through that balance. Like you're trying to supply solutions. Like back to the car that you got to get from Beijing to Shanghai, there's going to be a cost. You know, what's the cost to do the VFX? What's the cost to drive it? You know, like you got to get through that and help the producers really understand like the VFX side at least, so you can make informed decisions, you know. And a lot of times that's difficult because you got less time and things, so you have to really be on top of it and pushing hard. I think traditional VFX post-production mentality is a little slower than shoot mentality. You know, shoot mentality, ADs is just like a question comes up, you hop on the phone and you're trying to get the answer at that moment, where post is like, okay, we'll put it on the to-do list. And, you know, it just things, instead of minutes, they become hours or days in post. So somehow in pre-production, when dealing with the urgency of how to prep a shoot, the VFX people who are normally post-production people, they need to be thinking the way production people work, that kind of speed. So I like to think us and our team is like you're trying to be more production all the way through. Like you're just trying to treat the entire film like a shoot.
And do you think one day your company will be able to take on the full production just by yourself?
Yeah, absolutely. Like that's the goal. Like I think long term is like to do half, keep doing service stuff because it keeps cash flow going. It actually pushes R&D. It's really good for relationship, working with great directors and things like that. But at the same time, to do our own things, it will put us in a better position to recoup the value we bring for the what we provide. Yeah, we're developing stuff now and talking about a lot. We're going to shoot like a web series pilot pretty soon. So it's all happening because, you know, it's kind of like that as well. Like a big VFX film, there might be a sequence, you know, like a car chase or something like that. And we'll usually do most of that chase because it will end up, or most of that sequence, like even specific shooting things, because there might be hard requirements, special camera equipment, special like crane or rigging or access head type things that may be, you know, with the DP, it's just we have to like work through the requirements of that, very specific. Sometimes there's, you know, bigger fans which require generators and stuff like that, and it becomes our burden, because if the production doesn't get that equipment right, then it puts a pressure on us in post to clean it up and fix it. So it's our sort of, it comes out of us, like it comes out of our pain if we don't do it ourselves. So a lot of times we just take on the whole production for that one little sequence ourselves, you know, we'll AD it. You know, it's just making that jump from doing a really complicated, the entire process of this little 3-minute sequence that's really hard, to making the jump to doing all the other dramatic sequences and, you know,
the whole film.
The whole film, yeah. It's just making that jump. But I think we're positioned well to do it.
Well, if anyone wants to hire Bung Bung Production,
that's right. You're the audience.
Regarding, I don't know if you can answer this question, but regarding low in VFX. So, for example, in video game, now if you once again we go back to the Alien example, but if you in video games you cannot have like blood, like really red blood on in video games. So that's why usually people in China they kill monsters which have green blood. Don't have blood; they have a green blue or something. So I'm just wondering, is there any like things like this in VFX at some point?
Obviously there's a lot of the China censorship stuff. I mean, we had that exact one, like there's a movie Animal World we did, like the creatures we did in that, there's like this clown just killing all these like creatures, and we did that. You take the edge off of some of it's like censorship kind of thing, but a lot of it was tone. So and keep it from getting too dark creatively, you start to Google their eyes, you know, like they get a little bit more goofy and wacky in their performance, and you do this kind of playful, colorful blood and lighting, it actually takes the edge off of something getting too dark as well. So there is a creative, but yeah, there's stuff like that. Like there's violence issues. There's obviously, there's like, you know, ghost issues come up and stuff here. Like it's all the kind of same traditional thing. But yeah, how much gore, like how much blood is always kind of a question when we're doing stuff. But yeah, I don't think VFX is really different from just the normal filmmaking censorship and games.
Could you share any cool technical development that are coming in a few years?
Yeah, I mean, my favorite is, I mean, we were just talking about it before coming on, but currently there's a single frame scanning. You can do like a photogrammetry scan of a person. They sit in the middle of a rig. You stand there and whatever, they're in whatever clothes or whatever, one moment of time takes a bunch of photos at once. And then those photos, because of the triangulating the position of the photos to whatever's in that volume between them, you make a 3D version of that object. So you've been able to do that like on a still frame. They're starting to do that over time, over movement. So what happens then is you don't need to do as much lighting. You don't need to do camera moves. You put the performance in the middle of a giant volume and you capture that data. Now you have more information you've captured from the equivalent of a shoot. And you take that and you do more of the filmmaking in the post. So like there's a long way to go. The quality issues are huge. But what's great about particularly for China is it would reduce the shoot times, because a lot of our shoot is setting up lights and setting up tracks and the camera move and everything. So if you could minimize that and put that time into post, the actor schedules free up. Like our probably biggest issue in China is scheduling actors in certain times. Like that's kind of the limitation of filmmaking. It's not a VFX thing, but to get a movie greenlit and to get it up, it needs like the actor talent as much, if not more, than any sort of Hollywood sort of version of film. So,
and they are really well paid.
So
taking some part of your budget, maybe.
Yeah, a lot of the times. But if that could be more efficient, if there was a technology that you could shoot out an actor in half the time, it's like, you know, it's kind of even beyond budget saving. It's more like obstacle block, you know, like sometimes even if you have tons of money, you might not be able to get your actors because they might not like the story or whatever. So if you can invent a technology that can actually make a schedule more efficient, it's super interesting for China. So the other thing is if you're just capturing data, like if you think of a camera, you know, a camera is really all it is information is out there. I'm putting the camera in front and it's capturing the information what's in front of that box. It's just the data is like a two-dimensional grid instead of a depth grid, right? So this system would have way more data, just way, 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 way more information to allow you to change things later on. So the second thing it does, not only the actor schedules, but it like starts to open up the ability for directors to change more later on, which, you know, a lot of people like us and aren't going to like that, but it actually will make for a better product in a movie. So the process kind of becomes more cyclical instead of like a linear process. And I think like animation films, Pixar talks a lot about this. They can write their script, they can do their storyboards, they can do their layout, they can go into animation, they can go through lighting, but they can come back to script, right? So they can do this on a sequence level. They aren't limited by the capturing of the actor or the film, where filmmaking is pre-production, production, post-production. Even just the names are linear and they have a handoff between. They're completely separated. And a lot of what technology nowadays is doing is if you can do more changing with VFX, you're getting towards being able to change the story or the screenplay. So that's a bigger, broader kind of look at it. But like, even if you can just allow directors even somewhat to make their movie better, like more control in the edit, you're going to have better films, right? Like I wonder how many times directors sit in an editing suite and they just wish there was like a little bit more of a smile at a certain beat, you know, or the camera is just like a little bit to the side instead of where it is. And those simple kind of things that can actually make the feeling of shots a lot more like entertaining for our audience, it just is almost impossible for them to do. So if that stuff is data, like you have more data, you can move those detail of the camera all the way to the end when you know more. So the more you can push later in the process filmmaking, like if edit can control the camera, control the lighting a little bit, it would change filmmaking forever.
Definitely. And do you think that for the first invention, like basically making an hologram of the actor, do you think the audience, they will be ready for this?
Yeah. Like, I don't think like the ideas, I don't think they'll know. Like, you know, even Mandalorian, like there's a lot of stuff that's kind of mixing those techniques, you know, same kind of thing. Just if there's more data, you can do more stuff, right? Now, maybe some of the first scenes to do the like sort of volumetric video that go into a film, they're like, you know, maybe it's a sequence here, a sequence there. Like even some of the Blade Runner hologram stuff, they use those kind of techniques, but they treat it so it takes the edge off of, you know, at having to be too realistic, right? So that's probably how people will get accustomed to it. There'll be this sort of gradual, you know, I don't think a movie will just come out and try and do the whole thing. You know, I think it'll be a step-by-step graduation to get the audience sort of acclimated to that feeling. Like there's just a bunch of things I think going on that will, like the deep fake stuff is really interesting. Like The Irishman, you see that, the Netflix Scorsese movie, right? And they made De Niro and Pesci and those guys super young. And, you know, I don't know how much money is ILM, like top VFX, right? So like they just, you know, they modified the camera for shooting. They spent millions on the VFX. They took like an enormous amount of time and it was treated like a VFX process. And, you know, I think they won Oscar. I don't think they got the Oscar, but they got nominated for the Oscar and they got, you know, a lot of accolades for the technical achievement of turning those famous actors back to younger day. And still the quality was kind of like not that great. You know, I think at least with a VFX experience is not fantastic. It feels uncomfortable at times. You know, they feel this, you know, you feel a fakeness to it, like a makeup kind of thing. So technically it felt like it was in the scene, but it felt like a makeup. But this guy, some like hacker deep fake guy, went back and like redid the shots and he like used the, you know, it's obviously not the same resolution, it's not the same sort of higher standards, but he went through and did it and he did them like in a week or something. And like he redid the shots and it's better. Like just it's definitely better. And, you know, like zero budget, no anything. So there is stuff out there. Some of it will be, you know, who in the industry can make the jump, sort of get off of the platitudes of, you know, we've been doing this long and there's the right way to do it. And technically you have to reach, the, you know, just that kind of mentality, like to the new kind of hacker, you know, feeling thing. I think our industry needs some of that, you know, like the really high end places, they're in this mindset of just solving problems with money and, you know, But that's only a matter of time. And the world is, you know, is a big place, and people all over the world are doing this stuff now. So there's a lot more competition.
Yeah, and all of this will be the next step towards all going into the Matrix, and we can all live our lives the way we want.
Yeah, with the virus too, right? It's like kind of timely. Everyone's just all separated, and you know, you feel like you're working from home and don't go out anymore. And yeah.
And Atlas, would you have any recommendation on one or two films that you have worked on that the audience should see?
Yeah, sure. Like, I would recommend Animal World. Like, a lot of people saw it. It actually, like, the download sites and stuff, it actually is really super popular, right? Now, in China, it did kind of okay, but it was kind of pushing it for China. Like, the tone, it's like a little bit more superhero, a little bit more edge, but it's very digestible for a Chinese film for Western audiences. I actually think they kind of liked it better. So I'm super proud of the work we did on that. I think the quality is up there. And if people knew the budget is like, you know, it's just way less than like a Western kind of budget. But I think it's pretty good. The storytelling, it gets slow in the middle, you know, so there's storytelling problems, there's character problems, there's story problems. But I think visually it will be satisfying for a Western audience. So that's number one. And then Lost in Russia, you know, the Xu Zheng film that, yeah, was released online. I think it actually feels like you do feel a film, like a story in there in the filmmaking. I think some Westerners can actually hop on and get the family side of that. Yeah, it's not VFX wise. It's all like the train stuff on the outside, and there's a bear sequence, and there's like establishing shots and things like that. So it's not a VFX extravaganza, but it's interesting to see a family dynamic of a Chinese, you know, like a Chinese relationship of a middle-aged man going through a midlife crisis and his relationship with his mom. I think it's relatable anywhere. So I would suggest both of those.
Well, then that just brings me like a last question. Mm. You worked also on Lost in Hong Kong?
Yeah, I did.
And Lost in Thailand or...
I didn't work on Lost in Thailand. I worked on Lost. Sorry about that. Worked on Lost in Hong Kong.
And how do you compare then the VFX work on those, comparing to those two films?
Lost in Russia is better. Like the whole execution is better for sure. It was like, I think, just getting even better. Lost in Hong Kong was before our company, so I had worked on that before starting Bong Bong. But yeah, Lost in Russia is way, 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 way more and way better.
And why is it better?
I think time, the planning, the same kind of thing. We treated it more professionally just from the beginning. Everything was more methodical, just experience. You know, I think that is the main thing. Different requirement too. I think Lost in Hong Kong, you know, it's maybe half the shot count or something like that. It's just a lot less requirement. It's more cleanup and fixing stuff. Whereas Lost in Russia, there's, you know, you kind of don't have the movie. You can't really shoot the movie without the VFX. It doesn't exist. So it becomes a bigger player. So I guess that's part of it too, is I understand kind of like, you know, the value of what we did. And it's transparent. People won't see it, but, you know, that's a lot of the job.
Okay, great. Well, on those good words, we will wrap up this show.
Cool.
Thank you, John, for your time, and thank you, dear listeners, to stay until the end credits. Middle Earth is produced by China Compass Production, your production service in the Middle Kingdom. In case you have a cultural project related to China, drop us an email at chinacompassproduction.com and see how we can set up a win-win cooperation. Today's episode was produced by Aladdin Faré,
co-produced by Kaiser Guo,
music by Sean Calvo,
designed by Brandon Gonzalez.
When the pandemic will be over, and if you are in China, you should definitely add our WeChat official account, Middle Earth Podcast, to follow our future offline events. Also, if you like this show and want to keep us growing, you could do one thing. Go to your podcast app right now, leave a 5-star review so that others can find this content. Have a nice day and stay safe. Bye-bye.